The new Tempo Computer Superstore is now open in Lakeside Retail Park. Tempo is stacked full of top brands. IBM, Compaq, Amstrad, Toshiba, and the unique modular vanilla range. All the latest software from Lotus, Microsoft, Borland, and WordPerfect. Over 3,000 products all under one roof. Tempo has the stock, the right prices, expertise, and interest-free credit. Ask for written quotations.
It's an unbeatable deal at the Tempo Computer Superstore in Lakeside Retail Park, Essex, now open.
LBC News Talk, 97.3.
Well, you're tuned to Drive Time. So, Mr. Mellor's made his farewell speech. I suppose in his case we could say a farewell performance. And we're expecting his successor at the Ministry of Fun to be announced fairly soon. Well, no doubt the tabloid press are delighted, but the change, of course, does mean more uncertainty for the arts. They thought they'd finally found a sympathetic ear and voice in the Cabinet. So what happens now? Well, joining me is the theatre critic Anna Morell. Anna, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Angela.
Anna, how much do you think the arts will actually suffer now as a result of Mr. Mellor's departure?
Well, I think quite a lot, honestly. He'd got a lot of bounce. He'd got enthusiasm. He'd got dynamism. And it gave the arts a sort of high profile. And you know, in a recession, well, you know, the arts are hit straight away. They're the first ones to go. And we need it so badly at the moment, because if he gives us a high profile, even in London, if anybody does, this reflects all through the country. And we need the arts and the heritage and our theatre, which, after all, is the best we have in the world. It's the best thing. I mean, the thing is, about the only thing that's the best in the world, and we've got it. And he did give us some hope. Also, I feel people in the arts work for nothing. I mean, literally nothing. They work for love. And they're quite happy to go on if they're encouraged and enthusiastic. And I think this will be a blow. And I think it's a great tragedy.
I mean, what helped enormously was that he actually enjoyed the arts. He wasn't someone who was just put in there to keep the books, as it were. I mean, he did love opera. He did love going to the theatre. In fact, I think his youngest son is quite a budding little actor, isn't he?
Oh, was it musician? I mean, I must say, I'm at the theatre, as you know, every night. I haven't seen him in the theatre. I've seen him at the Royal Opera House. And, I mean, the cynical side of me thinks, what a peachy job, you know, because there you have the tickets for the Royal Opera House, whatever theatre you want and everything. But actually, it's a big responsibility, and it's an enormous job. And we need someone to be there, not to just flip in and do 100 days or 170 days, but to be there and to help build, watch it build up.
Anna, as you're just talking, I've just been told in my ear, it's absolutely hot off the press, Peter Brook, the former Northern Ireland secretary, has just been appointed as the Heritage Minister.
No.
Yes, now what do you think about that?
How amazing! Give me more news. Have you got more news on him?
Well, he was former Northern Ireland secretary. That's all I can tell you at the moment. I don't know what his background in the arts is, but that's the man who has been appointed as the new Heritage Minister. So, I mean, he is a man who has held a major post within the Cabinet. He will obviously, therefore, be someone who has Mr. Major's ear, and he will be a man of some clout and influence. Does that fill you with hope?
Yes, that's exactly what is needed. I mean, clout is much needed, and what Mellor had was contact with the Treasury, with the purse strings, and that's needed too. But I do feel, honestly, that you need some knowledge of the arts. It's no good just coming in, I don't think, unless you've got some knowledge and some experience, because you can't just read the books. It's not like that. It's not like you open up the accounts and you see, aha, I see how it's built up. The arts don't work like that. So I hope he's got some experience of it, and I hope he's got some love of it, because that helps like anything.
Now, I mean, obviously, he's got to have sympathy, and obviously, he's got to have strength. Presumably, also, it's important that he's not partisan in his likes. I mean, many people felt with David Mellor, because he was known to be such a great lover of the opera, that perhaps some of the money went more to opera than it did to some of the other departments. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. And I'll tell you something else that's true, and this is what's really sad. I think a lot of people, a lot of companies, don't dare speak their real mind, because their livelihood depends on it. It's okay for me because I'm free, a flit from one thing to another. But I do think it's so difficult for the theatre. They daren't say this or that in case things are just chopped off. It would be tragic, you know.
In other words, so, if they upset the minister, maybe their grant will get cut
the
next time.
Yes, I mean, that's a terrible way to feel. So I hope exactly, as you said, that he can go from the British Library, which after all needs, through to the art galleries, through everywhere. I hope he has a general interest and love. which I'm sure will be built up because it's terribly exciting. I mean, we've got wonderfully exciting arts.
Anna, just give us some idea of how badly off the arts are in this country at the moment.
Oh, it's been absolutely terrible. I even know on because I was producing a play as well, the number of plays that have had to come off. I mean, I know the theatre more, obviously, because that's my pitch. But it is so very, very difficult. But I do think in the theatre that if something is really good, it will survive. And this has been proved over all the years. But if you think of our heritage, I'm connected to the RSC. I see a lot of their stuff. I'm so proud of what we have in this country. And, in fact, France is spending far, far more money on there. They realize what they've got and what they can do. They've got 50 more libraries planned for the next 2 years. They've built I don't know how many in the last 10.
And also, of course, people tend to forget, when you look sometimes at the successful side of theatre here in London, when you see, as it were, many of the successful productions of people like Cameron McIntosh or Andrew Lloyd Webber, you think, well, they're raking in the money, so what does it matter? But in fact, the Arts Council and Arts Grant and funding is not necessarily for things like that. It's for things that perhaps are, as you say, vital to our heritage, but are not getting the sort of huge revenues from the audiences that they deserve. And it's for small companies. It's really to keep things alive, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I see a lot. I have to say that the most exciting work I see are the small companies in small theatres around. And sometimes, and you see them gradually building them up. Sometimes they drop away. And then this is why I say we need not to be changing over all the time, because you want to be able to see the progress. It's very, very slow. It takes 3 years to put a play on, sometimes more. And you can't have somebody come in for 100 days saying, no, really, we can't spare that, or yes, we can, and then go. It needs some form of continuity.
Well, let's hope that Peter Brook will provide that. I hope that we may be able to talk to the new Minister for Fun, or the new Heritage Secretary, as we should properly call him, before the end of the programme. But before you leave us, Anna, the lady who, in a way, started all of this, Antonia de Sancha, the actress, she's someone known to you, isn't it? Isn't she? I mean, what do you know about her acting and her career?
No, oddly enough, I mean, a village in Spain where we've been going for years and years and years, she and her family had a house there as well, and so I've seen her since she was 10 and upwards. And going, I say, all the time to the theatre, I've never seen her in the theatre. But believe me, this tag will land. Why it's such a tragedy, it's a tragedy all round. And she will never lose the tag either. Now, if she's a great actress, she'll come right the way through. But as I say, I've never seen her, oddly enough. And I get all the press releases. I've never... So I can't give you an opinion on that, except that I think it's very sad.
Well, perhaps what she's done is given some of her greatest performances more recently in the tabloid press.
I think maybe she has.
Anna, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Angela.
Anna Morell there, theatre critic, with her comments on the passing of the Heritage Secretary, the former Heritage Secretary, David Mellor. But we're able to tell you that the new Heritage Secretary is going to be the former Northern Ireland Secretary, Peter Brook. It's 5:02 here on Drive Time.
I'm hungry. It's that time of the day. See the golden sun, I've made up my mind. There's nothing quite like a McDonald's. Big Mac with fries with a shake off the side and a good time. Filet of fish, my favorite satisfied. What about it with cheese? This is
a Big Mac meal. Sandwich
shades of Queen and McDonald's there. Here's Fred.
M25, the western sector, still the busiest part of the motorway complexes around London. From Junction 12, the M3, up to Junction 16, the M40, in varying degrees, fast, slow and virtual standstill. East India Dock Road, earlier accident near Chris Street, that's been cleared but still delays. And Chatsworth Road, Junction Clifton Road, North 5, accident there causing some delays as well. Traffic and trains every 10 minutes.
Thank you very much indeed, Fred. It's 5 o'clock. Time for the news.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 5 o'clock. I'm Patrick Muirhead. In this bulletin, Peter Brook is appointed the new Heritage Secretary on the day David Mellor told MPs why he had to go. A battered wife who killed her husband walks free from the Old Bailey, and the LSE fails in its bid for County Hall. Downing Street has announced David Mellor's successor as Heritage Secretary. He's the former Northern Ireland Secretary, Peter Brook. The news came in the last few minutes. Meanwhile, Mr. Mellor has been explaining to his fellow MPs why he decided to resign from the Cabinet. In a special statement in the Commons this morning, Mr. Mellor said he was heartily sick of the pressure he was under and of the way the media had been harassing him. But he continued to insist that he'd not breached the rules governing ministers. From Westminster, LBC's Des Fahey.
David Mellor said he always intended to go if he was embarrassing the government, and that point was reached yesterday. He said he was not prepared to resign because of his affair with Antonia de Sancha, but the revelations of his free holiday in Spain proved too much, although he insisted no ministerial rules were broken.
What is absolutely clear, that there was no question of any impropriety, and I hope I can leave office with that fact very clearly established.
But David Mellor accepted that people were entitled to challenge his judgment.
A battered wife, jailed for setting fire to her violent husband, has been freed at the Old Bailey. Kiranjit Ahluwalia was sent to prison for murdering her postal worker husband as he slept at their Crawley home in 1989. Last July, the appeal court quashed her conviction. Now, the judge, Mr. Justice Hobhouse, has imposed a new sentence which takes into account the time she's already served. Cheering broke out as the sentence was read out. Outside the court, Ahluwalia pleaded for the release of other battered women who've been jailed for similar reasons.
I am pleased, very pleased, but my thoughts and my all best wishes are with my friends Sarah Thornton, Carol Peters, Janet Garden, Gloria Sambakel, and Mary Duran, and all of them. Please do not forget my friends.
The London School of Economics has failed in its attempt to buy County Hall. This means the former GLC headquarters on the Riverside can now be sold to the Japanese Shirayama Corporation. It plans to turn the main part of the building into a hotel and leisure complex. Environment Secretary Michael Howard made the announcement this afternoon and says the London residuary body now has the go-ahead for the sale.
Now the London residuary body are free to proceed because I've lifted my direction and I imagine that what will happen is that they will proceed with the contract which they have with Shirayama, who will carry on their project.
The main reason for the failure of the LSE bid is the lack of approval from the university's funding council, one of the conditions of the sale. Spokesman for the LSE, Ian Crawford, says the funding council's decision came as a complete shock.
We are somewhat astonished at the university funding council's report. After all, the decision seems to have been made entirely based on the university funding council report. We were entirely confident that our financial projections would stand up, and we still are, in fact. The funding council have agreed with our general expansion strategy, and they have agreed that our present site is inadequate, but haven't seen fit to approve our solution to it.
LBC News Time is 3 minutes past five. A 7-year-old girl has been raped on her way to school near Basildon in Essex. The half-naked and sobbing child was found wandering in a state of shock in a park at Pitsey. Officers with tracker dogs discovered part of the child's clothing scattered around the area. The man leading the hunt, Superintendent Ivan Dibley, says it was an horrific attack.
The victim is receiving care from us, and we have some very good practices with regard to rape victims these days. But of course, she is a 7-year-old girl who has been subjected to an horrendous attack, and she is extremely distressed.
The attacker is described as black, aged between 20 and 30, with protruding front teeth. A 31-year-old policeman is undergoing surgery after being stabbed and seriously injured in North London. The detective, who hasn't been named, is being treated at the Royal London Hospital. The stabbing happened when two men were seen acting suspiciously in Edgware, claiming to be door-to-door salesmen. Two detectives approached, but the men attacked them with a knife, stabbing one through the chest. Two suspects are being questioned. The policeman's condition is described as serious. A 25-year-old mother has been brutally murdered in East London. The attack happened in broad daylight as she walked with her child by her side. LBC's Susie Pote has this.
25-year-old Jennifer Grant was taking her young daughter to school in Leighton this morning when she was attacked by a man with a knife. She suffered fatal throat injuries and was found in a nearby driveway by a passerby just before 9 a.m. A 6-inch kitchen knife was recovered near the scene of the murder in James's Lane. A 27-year-old man is now in police custody at Leighton Police Station. Police are appealing for witnesses.
The time now is 5 past 5. In the city, the 100-share index is down 20.2 at 26.01 exactly. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones is down 27 at 32.60. On the foreign exchanges, the pound is trading against the dollar at 171.5 and against the mark at 2 marks 54. We see sport. Chelsea manager Ian Porterfield has taken his spending this season beyond the £4 million mark by signing utility man David Hopkin from Morton for £300,000. The 22-year-old becomes Porterfield's 7th signing of the season. In golf, Nick Faldo's the leader in the clubhouse at the Belgian Open at Royal Zute. Faldo's second round 4 under par 67 leaves him on a halfway total of 6 under par 136, 3 strokes ahead of Sandy Lyle, and well placed to maintain hopes for his 5th European win of the season. Tennis. Legendary figures from the men's and women's tennis world clash in the betting capital of the world tonight in what's being billed as the Battle of the Sexes in Las Vegas. 40-year-old Jimmy Connors, who's won more singles tournaments than any other male player in history, takes on the Queen of Wimbledon, 9-times winner Martina Navratilova. There's £250,000 up for grabs, but pride is most at stake for both players.
Two champions going at it and that never had a chance to play against each other before.
This is two players still competing in maybe not their prime, but, you know, in a respective way that we can go out and still, you know, give the great young players a run for their money.
The Tea Time News again. Downing Street has announced David Mellor's successor as Heritage Secretary. He's the former Northern Ireland Secretary, Peter Brook. A battered wife from Crawley, jailed for setting fire and killing her violent husband, has been freed at the Old Bailey. And the LSE has failed in its attempt to buy County Hall. The complex will now be sold to the Japanese Shiriyama Corporation, who plan to turn the main part of the building into a hotel and leisure complex. With the LBC weather forecast for now on the weekend, here's Philip Eden.
From the LBC Weather Station 13, the temperature, the wind easterly at 6 miles an hour and the barometer 1,012 millibars and falling slowly. There's a wide range of weather and a wide range of temperature across the London area at the moment. To the north and west of the capital in the direction of the Chiltern Hills, it's very misty and drizzly with a temperature of about 11 degrees. To the east of London, for example at Southend and at Maidstone, the weather's bright and the temperature's 18 degrees. That's how it's going to stay for the rest of daylight hours. Overnight it should be more or less dry throughout London and the southeast, but it'll become generally misty, especially in out-of-town areas, and there'll be some quite thick fog out in the country as well by the morning. Quite a mild night, 14 in central London, 12 or 13 in the suburbs. The weekend outlook is for warm and dry weather tomorrow, a rest from the bad weather we've had recently. There'll be some hazy sunshine. The temperature could reach 22 degrees tomorrow afternoon, but heavy showers and thunderstorms, perhaps with torrential rain again, are likely on Saturday night and Sunday. Philip Eden, LBC Weather.
Around the motorways, busy on the western section, the M25, the M4 elevated section going out of town now rather slow, and the M3 from Junction 2 to Junction 3, that's out towards Lightwater westbound. Earlier roadworks there still causing some delays. Chatsworth Road, Junction Clifton Road, there was an earlier accident, now clear, but delays in that particular area of North 5, and Clifford Avenue, the earlier accident around by the South Circuit Road and Kingsway, still causing problems. And of course, New Burlington Place off Regent Street, an incident there, road closures in, and there may be more to follow, so avoid the area. Traffic and trains every 10 minutes.
And you're listening to Angela Rippon's Drive Time. Well, the long-awaited summit between South African President F.W. de Klerk and the ANC leader Nelson Mandela looks set to go ahead tomorrow morning. Now, it's thought that the deadlock was broken by a letter from the president to Mr. Mandela, guaranteeing parole for the three guerrillas who've been convicted of killing whites. Now, the original plans for talks were smashed in June after the Boipatong massacre. Meanwhile, that other international flashpoint, Bosnia, is back in the news, with Foreign Secretary Douglas Hurd defiantly refusing to order military intervention. Well, Mr. Hurd was speaking in the Foreign Affairs debate on this, the second day of the emergency recall of Parliament. And joining me now, straight from that debate, is Labour's Foreign Affairs spokesman, George Robertson. Mr. Robertson, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
First of all, let me ask you to comment on this apparent breakthrough in talks in South Africa. Are you optimistic now that de Klerk and Mandela can come to some sort of agreement?
Well, it's very good news, quite frankly, that the two leaders are going to talk. And the Foreign Secretary announced this morning that he'd spoken on the phone to both of them the other day. So, you know, Britain has still got an active relationship there. And one must be optimistic because the picture has been so dismal. And with every tragedy following each preceding tragedy, one believed that there was going to be really no hope, that it would all collapse into ruins. But there are actually some wise people alive in South Africa just now and conscious of the long term. And I think that this summit tomorrow is an indication that sanity is there and we must hope it prevails.
But isn't that where the main problem lies? Indeed, where the problem may lie in the future. Mandela may be a man of vision and so may de Klerk. But Mandela has got a lot of hotheads on his side and indeed so has de Klerk with the right wing.
Well, indeed, there are problems for both of them. But I think that we're lucky in as much as both of them seem to be able, first of all, to control the hotheads at the moment. But secondly, to be able to look beyond the immediate problems which incite the trouble on both sides. And I think that they also have a capability of reaching out to the vast majority of people, whether white or black, in the communities who want desperately to avoid a revolutionary transition to what is now almost inevitably going to happen. And I think that the fact that they are now talking tomorrow, that there have been concessions made by both sides, and very substantial concessions as well they have been, both by the ANC and by President de Klerk. These concessions have now been made, the talks will go ahead, and I think that we should and we must be optimistic for the future.
So a glimmer of hope in South Africa. In Bosnia, quite a different kettle of fish. Now, do you back the Foreign Secretary's decision not to send in combat troops? Because that's really what we're talking about.
Yes, we back that decision. I think it makes sense. The Foreign Secretary outlined what we on the opposition side knew as well, and that is that all the military advice is that you cannot get engaged in a limited scale in Bosnia just now. Such a vast number of troops would be required, and even that wouldn't guarantee that you would actually make an impact in these ethnic conflicts that you could not possibly contemplate it. So we agree with that decision. We also agreed very strongly today, and there was all part and support from all sections of the House for the troops from this country who will now be going out to support the humanitarian convoy. So there is a cross-party consensus on these two areas. Even although we've points of difference with the government about other elements of what's happening, we support the troops going out there, but we don't believe that they should get in any deeper than the protection of the humanitarian convoy.
And yet, they have been told that should they be fired on, they can fire back. That is a potential flashpoint. Where do we stand then?
Well, the Defence Secretary made it clear this afternoon that they would have the right to defend themselves, that they would not be restricted in the way that some of the initial reports were making out. And although he didn't, for obvious reasons, give the rules of engagement, because that would be to help the people who might fire on these troops, I think he made it clear that they would have a right of self-defence. That's as much as we can do in the present circumstances. And there is at least some evidence to suggest that the warring factions themselves, recognising the trouble and the problems and the despair of the people, the civilians who are being helped, are going to stand back slightly from these convoys. But it's a highly risky operation. We all know that. But the mission that they are seeking to accomplish is a good one and a worthy one. And I think that they have a specific task, and that is to get medical and food supplies into the civilian populations of all of the area. So we are going to feed and hopefully treat the people, the innocent people, in all areas of the conflict. And although it's a pretty despairing picture, and it looks as though they might fight themselves to a complete standstill, creating a graveyard that they can all call their own backyard, it may well be that they are approaching the point of exhaustion. And I would hope that the humanitarian convoys will, at the very least, be the ones who are going to be spared.
So your hope effectively is that they will exhaust themselves before the British troops find, however reluctantly, that they are sucked into this conflict simply by having been put in a position of self-defence?
Well, there have been troops there up to now. There have been some casualties, but not nearly as much as the pessimists have suggested. There have been air flights in, although they've been temporarily suspended. And again, they were allowed in by the warring parties. So it's not just a triumph of hope over experience. There is a reality and there is an experience that we've got to go by. The other thing is that the community, the wider community outside of old Yugoslavia expects that something will be done, expects that the poor innocents who are tragically the victims in this conflict will get the help from the outside world. So we have to do it. It's right. The United Nations deems it proper to do. The United Nations believes it can be done with minimum casualties, and I think we should support that.
Let me ask you finally, Maastricht was not actually mentioned at all in the debate on foreign affairs today, and yet it is the one issue that looms over Britain, probably larger than many of our domestic issues at the moment. Whenever that may be, the Prime Minister brings the issue of Maastricht to the House of Commons, how is the Labour Party going to vote? Where will you stand?
Well, it'll depend on what we're told when they bring the bill back. Because, of course, the bill before the House of Commons is not the Treaty of Maastricht. It is the Treaty of Maastricht minus the social chapter, which is the basic protection for workers and people in industry.
It is also the Maastricht bill minus whatever the Danes may insist is included.
Well, plus it might be the Maastricht Treaty plus whatever is agreed for the Danes as well. But that's what we've got to know about. We're not going to commit ourselves in advance when we don't know what the package is going to be. Will it be a package without the social chapter, or will the government see sense, the same sense that the other 11 countries in the community have seen? And will it be Maastricht plus whatever is required for the Danes, and will we like that? Until the government comes forward with that, and I hope they start doing something about that soon, then it would be unreasonable for an opposition to make a decision either on tactics or on the principal way in which we might vote in advance of that.
Not only the opposition, but I suspect the Prime Minister's own party. Mr. Robertson, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
George Robertson there, Labour's foreign affairs spokesman, with us here on Drive Time, and me, Angela Rippon.
In the real world of word processing, who is the number one market leader in the UK?
Word Perfect.
Who in the world of software can boast over 1 million users of their Windows word processor?
Word Perfect.
Who in the same world are the only company offering the freedom of choice to use Windows, DOS or OS 2 all on the same license at no extra cost?
Word Perfect.
And who will give you excellent customer support from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m?
Word Perfect.
So where in the world would you find Word Perfect?
Call JWP Information Services on 0753 580 100 and ask for Word Perfect Marketing.
Are you in the world of Word Perfect? Are you in the real world?
Oh, how can I afford this?
Private medical premium due? Stop. Everyone needs to save money these days. So find out about the cost-saving advantages of Comprehensive Allied Dunbar Healthcare. It could save you hundreds of pounds. Dial 100 and ask for free phone health quote. That's free phone health quote. Allied Dunbar Healthcare, underwritten at Lloyds.
LBC News Talk, 97.3.
And it's 17 and a half minutes past five. Well, as you heard before the news when we announced, Peter Brook, the former Northern Ireland Secretary, is to replace Mr. David Mellor as the Heritage Secretary. You will remember that Peter Brook is the man who sang My Darling Clementine on the Gay Byrne show back in January over there in Ireland, and as a result, lost his job as the Northern Ireland Secretary. So we do know that he has appeared and sung in public, but whether that means he's got theatrical ambitions or an interest in the performing arts, we have yet to discover. But in the meantime, what of the gentleman that he succeeds, David Mellor? Well, his one-time lover, Antonia de Sancha, has said today that Mr. Mellor brought his downfall on himself. She says, at the end of the day, you are responsible for your own actions. You wake up, you have to get on with it. You have to think before you act. Well, that's the line that the press are taking, saying that they did not make him have an affair or take expensive holidays with a Palestinian woman. But newspaper editors are being blamed for his demise nevertheless. The editor of the Sunday Times, Andrew Neil, joins us now. Andrew, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon to you, Angela.
First of all, do you have any comment at all on Peter Brook, former Northern Ireland Secretary, taking over as Heritage Minister?
Well, it sounds as if John Major's lost the script with this appointment. I mean, the best you can say is that at least it's hard to imagine anybody sucking Peter Brook's toe.
I mean, do we know whether or not he has any... As I say, apart from having sung My Darling Clementine on Gay Burns' television show, do we know if he's got any interest in the performing arts at all?
No, we don't. No doubt, though, they are going through the fire right now to say what a wonderful opera lover he is and all the rest, and probably has a great interest in 4th century Tibetan art or whatever. He's a civilised man, but what it means is that the Department of National Heritage is now going to be downgraded. Brooke will not be a champion of the arts in the way that David Mellor was, so the arts have lost a champion and a friend right at the heart of Cabinet. It's a safe appointment for John Major. Peter Brooke isn't going to rock the boat. He's probably amazed to discover he's back in the Cabinet again. He'll do what he's told over Europe, where Mr. Major has some real problems, and the BBC is probably... breathing a huge sigh of relief because Brooke will take a very establishment view of the BBC and it will be almost entirely in the hands of his civil servants. There'll be no radical changes anywhere here. For a new, classless, young, thrusting, thriving Tory party, it's a rather strange signal to send to the country.
Yes. Well, you said it yourself, David Mellor is a great loss, so do you think that perhaps now, when some Fleet Street editors, or so-called previously Fleet Street editors, have got an opportunity to sit back and think about what has happened as a result of the barrage of press over the last several weeks, that there may be a few regrets that Mr. Mellor is now gone?
Well, there might be. Peter Brooke might turn out to be quite tough on privacy laws. I imagine he's a very old-fashioned view of something like privacy, which does not accord with the views of most editors and certainly not most tabloid editors. He might turn out to be rather tough on that issue, a lot tougher than David Mellor was. So it could be, I only speculate, that David Mellor will have the last laugh.
Yes, I reckon he will. He certainly was laughing today in the comments. I mean, what did you think of his performance today?
I thought it was all right, but I wondered if it was necessary. I mean, to make a speech to the House to explain one's resignation is important if it's Geoffrey Howe on a matter of principle or substantial policy, but this wasn't. This was a result of scandal, and I'm not sure. As a piece of parliamentary theatre, it was fine, and he handled it quite well. But I wondered if it was really necessary to do that.
So, how are you going to be handling the story this weekend?
Oh, massively.
I did wonder.
I think the more important story was. I mean, this has been a dreadful week for John Major. John Smith wiped the floor with him and the Tories in the debate, and he's had the Mellor resignation. The Brooke appointment will not be all that popular with the press, I shouldn't have thought. The pound and the economy continue to be in a mess. And I think that, in a way, the Mellor story, which will be fun and interesting to reconstruct this weekend, and I understand that the tabloids are preparing another volley of more revelations. At least that's the information we're getting. So it will still be a pretty unpleasant weekend for the former Secretary of State for National Heritage, I think. The real story now is the position of the major government, which is in such a dire condition that's the story to follow, as David Mellor, I think after this weekend, quickly slips from the headlines.
Is it not also the position of Mr. Major himself that you need to look at? I mean, he said it's being claimed... Well, in fact, I saw him sitting there in the House looking, if you can mix our metaphors with the football analogy, and say that he was as sick as a parrot on the front bench there. I mean, he supported Mellor the way that he did. As you said yourself, he's lost the script, you think, in appointing Peter Brooke as his replacement. And, I mean, his judgment has come under fire and is certainly in question at the moment, isn't it?
Well, there's no question that there's no question it's in question. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, particularly since there is no economic policy has been unveiled, no strategy to get him through the winter to replace what was the former lodestone, the centrepiece of his policy. That was really shot to smithereens last night and this morning by the Germans, who said, let's get on with ratifying Maastricht and we ain't going to reform the EMS. Now, these are the two things that he went out of his way to say had to be done in his speech yesterday. He's caught with what Americans would say is between a rock and a hard place. So on the one hand, he's got at least 70 Tory Eurosceptics who aren't going to go wrong with re-entry to the EMS or Maastricht. And on the other hand, he's got the rest of Europe, led by the Germans, who say, let's get on with it. We want to move to the Maastricht Treaty and we're not changing the EMS to suit the Brits. So I don't know where he goes from here. I mean, I think there's a huge policy vacuum. His own position, I don't think, is yet under threat because there's no immediate heir apparent. And indeed, the only one that is, Heseltine, is even more European-minded than John Major. So there's not any salvation down that road. But if he continues with this vacuum through the winter, then I think the erosion of his position will steadily increase.
Andrew, thank you very much indeed for joining us again.
Bye-bye.
Andrew Neil there, the editor of the Sunday Times, and certainly not only will the Sunday Times make interesting reading this weekend, but also Andrew's programme here on Sunday morning on LBC News Talk, where at the moment you're listening to Drive Time with me, Angela Rippon, at 24. 24 minutes past five, which is time for me to introduce Fred.
Around the motorway, Junction 25 anti-clockwise, an accident there at Waltham Cross causing delays, and Junction 17 anti-clockwise, an accident there at Maple Cross also causing delays, and generally speaking, the western side and northern sector of the M25, very slow indeed. You can virtually say that from Junction 11 round at Chertsey right up to about Junction 20, in varying degrees, slow, very slow, and of course that accident 17 not helping either. Clifford Avenue, South Circuit Road, no update on that. There was an accident there earlier when the traffic is still heavy. I'm told the closures in the West End, New Burlington Street, off Regent Street, is an incident going on there. It's not affecting the area too badly. Most of them are contained in sort of mews and side streets around there, but obviously do avoid the area if you can. Got a couple of cancellations, Charing Cross to Hayes the 620 and Sidcup the 626. And I was telling you earlier about Roberts Bridge. There was a land slippage there and the line was closed. It says now they operate trains in both directions between Roberts Bridge and Hastings. They're using one line only and there will be considerable delays. Traffic and trains every 10 minutes.
Thank you, Fred.
Who would have thought that I'd ever regret not paying attention at school? It's just that when I listen to the news these days, it all seems so complex. Not all the news, mind you. For instance, all next week, Mike Carlton and Robbie Vincent are giving away pairs of tickets to Paris, Brussels, Stockholm, Berlin, Zurich, Lugano and Rotterdam. Courtesy of London City Airport, the business traveller's first choice for European city connections. There's news, easy enough to understand.
For your escape route to Europe, check in at London City Airport and stay tuned to Mike Carlton's Morning Report and Robbie Vincent's Nightline on LBC News Talk 97.3 FM.
Now, I think the last time I was in Paris was Mr. Mackenzie's trip to the Louvre.
This Saturday in The Times, the would-be MP who turned his unsuccessful election speeches into award-winning fiction, the TV critic who turned to TV drama, the man who made a detective sing. Dennis Potter talks about the darkness in his past that has coloured his imagination today and his new drama, Secret Friends. Together with a long weekend in Moscow, Jonathan Meade's eating out in Brighton and Stephen Bailey on the new Menace of the Streets, The Urban Cyclist. The Times Saturday Review in colour. It's special because Saturday is.
LBC News Talk.
And it's 26 minutes past five. Well, President de Klerk and Nelson Mandela, as we were saying earlier in the programme, are finally getting together tomorrow for their long-awaited peace summit. The talks have repeatedly been cancelled in protest at violence from the security forces. Well, the ANC leader is going to meet members of the Pretoria government, headed by the state president in Johannesburg. Well, joining us from there now is LBC Southern Africa correspondent David O'Sullivan. David, good evening to you.
Good evening, Angela.
How much of a surprise is it that these talks are actually finally going ahead?
I think it is something of a surprise, though for the last 18 days the preparations have been made for it. So we've been looking forward for 18 days. But if you consider that on the 7th of September, when the Bishu massacre happened, that's in their Tsiskai homeland, the country was on the brink of civil war. And it would have been ludicrous to suggest on that day that talks within 18 days would take place between Nelson Mandela and F.W. de Klerk, because the ANC had made such stringent demands on the government to meet demands on violence, on controlling the security forces, on releasing political prisoners, and none of those had been met. It seemed quite ludicrous to suggest that talks would be now held. Yet they've been able to solve some problems as a matter of urgency, and they realise that it's imperative that they meet now to discuss violence and try and take the country forward to create a climate for negotiation.
But things must be on a knife edge. I mean, is there a feeling that if the slightest thing goes wrong, the ANC will walk away again?
Absolutely, and Nelson Mandela has even said that. He said he would only meet President de Klerk at this peace summit if the groundwork had been done by their deputies, and that was why we had 18 days of preparatory behind-the-scenes discussions. And he said if the groundwork isn't done properly, and I go to the summit and I find that I can't reach agreement with President de Klerk, then it's highly unlikely that we will talk again in the future. It was very threatening words from Mr. Mandela, that if something goes wrong, that is the end. And so it is, as you say, on a knife edge. Things have to go properly tomorrow, otherwise the country will be set further back than we've ever been.
And presumably the majority are getting very impatient to see change.
They are so impatient that in some of the areas, particularly in Natal province, where the Zulu Inkatha movement, the ANC's major rival, is dominant, those ANC people want to march on the Zulu capital to voice their political opposition to Inkatha and to voice their opposition to the South African government. And if that kind of march goes ahead, we're on the brink of civil war, definitely. But these people are adamant. They will march. They want to have political expression, and they want it now. And they were even prepared to skirt with the idea of civil war to get that political expression. That's how impatient they are.
And that's also an indication of how important these talks are. David, thank you very much indeed. David O'Sullivan there, our South African correspondent. You're listening to Drive Time, 29 past 5. Fred.
Still the main problems on the M25, Junction 17, Maple Cross, anti-clockwise, an earlier accident. I understand it's moved to the hard shoulder. People are stopping to look, and that's causing problems in both directions. Junction 24, 25, also a similar situation. An accident there a little while back, and that's causing problems in both directions as well. And the western sector of the M25 in general, very slow indeed. Well, road closures in the New Burlington Street off Regent Street area. New Burlington Place is closed off due to an incident. I understand they haven't brought in any further closures, but obviously that area isn't a place to avoid at the present time. On Network South, these out of Charing Cross, Hayes a 620 and Sidcup a 626. Don't go. That's traffic and trains every 10 minutes.
Thank you very much indeed, Fred. Well, the LSE have lost their fight to buy the old GLC headquarters in London. I should be talking to one of the LSE's representatives after we've had the headline news now from Patrick Muirhead.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 5:30. A former cabinet minister who was dropped from the government in January has been brought back as the new Heritage Secretary. Peter Brook, a former Northern Ireland secretary, takes over from the disgraced David Mellor, who stood down after newspaper publicity about his private life. A battered wife jailed for setting fire to her violent husband has been freed at the Old Bailey. Kiranjit Arawalia was sent to prison for murdering her husband as he slept at their home in Crawley in 1989. Last July, the appeal court quashed her conviction. The London School of Economics has failed in its attempt to buy County Hall. This means the former GLC headquarters on the Riverside can now be sold to the Japanese Shirayama Corporation. It plans to turn the main part of the building into a hotel and leisure complex. A 7-year-old girl has been raped on her way to school near Basildon in Essex. The half-naked and sobbing child was found wandering in a state of shock in a park at Pitsea. A 31-year-old policeman is undergoing surgery after being stabbed and seriously injured in North London. The detective, who hasn't been named, is being treated at the Royal London Hospital. London's weather the rest of the day, overcast and damp. Tonight, mild and rather humid. The cloud cover should slowly lift and break, but it's going to become quite misty during the early hours of tomorrow, with some out-of-town fog patches. Lowest temperatures 14 degrees in central London, 12 degrees in the suburbs. And tomorrow, a warm day with some hazy sunshine after the clearance of early morning mist and fog. And the temperature could climb as high as 22 degrees during the afternoon, but there's a strong threat of thunderstorms tomorrow night. It's 28 minutes to 6.
One car company has invested over £2 billion in research and development in the last year, has launched three brand new models in the last 9 months, and is so sure of their reliability, offers a 3-year or 60,000-mile warranty on every new car. The cars are the new Corolla, Carina E, and Camry. The company, of course, is Toyota. For great deals at your nearest dealer, call Free Phone Toyota and find out for yourself why the car in front is a Toyota.
Shouldn't we be leaving for the airport soon? I mean, we don't want to be late. This Brussels meeting's mega vital importance-wise.
Worry not, Nige. Let's see. The flight leaves at 12, so if we say an hour and a half to get to the airport...
Call it two, Bob. Traffic
right,
and all that.
Two, right, plus an hour to check in, so that's a two.
Certain,
that's two,
30,
three,
11,
half,
5, 5, 5, 30,
we should leave here at exactly...
20 minutes ago.
Oh, dear.
Think I'm going to cry, Bob.
Be strong, Nigel. Be strong.
If they flew Air UK from Stansted, the airport might not be such a long haul. Stansted is just 20 minutes up the M11 from the M25. For details of flights to Europe's major business centres, contact your travel agent or call Air UK on 0787 881106.
LBC News Talk 97.3.
And at 27 minutes to 6, let's take a look at the financial scene. LBC's financial news is brought to you by Nelson Bakewell Chartered Surveyors, traditional service in the modern manner. The FTSE 100 share index has closed down 20.2 at 2,601 exactly. The FT30, that's down 21.1 at 1,915.6. With the details of today's trading, here's Peter Plisner.
Good afternoon. Shares ended another seesaw session with modest losses after buying enthusiasm dried up and the ever-present influence of FTSE futures dragged the market down to a weaker close. Gold was trading at $349.90 an ounce, up $1.45. Brent crude for November delivery was trading at $20.30 a barrel. That's down 30 cents on last night's London close level. In the currency markets, the pound dipped to an all-time low against the German mark, but recovered later, trading around 2 marks 54. The pound against the dollar, down $1.71.5. The French franc hit a six-week high against the German mark. The dollar, though, remained on the sidelines. The latest Dow Jones index down 29.98 at 3257.89. In company news, shares in Unilever rose 3 to 10.49. It's buying a state-owned Czechoslovakian oil and fats factory for $10 million. Shares in Airbrake Leisure have been suspended pending clarification of the company's financial position. Earlier, shares fell more than 70% before being suspended at 3.5. In company results, Central Independent Television is sparkling with profits of £15.1 million, almost four times higher than last time. The dividend is up a third, shares up 71 at 14.45. Fellow ITV contractor HTV has surprised the market with losses of just over £5 million against £4.8 million in the red last time. The Welsh broadcaster has passed on the dividend. Shares slipped 14 to 27. Builders Joan Molam have reported half-time losses of £9.9 million after restated profits of £7 million last time. The interim dividend has been cut 54%. Shares up 2 at 61. Other results in brief. Clayform Properties report losses of £10.9 million, up from £6.6 million in the red last time. The Wembley PLC profits are almost £2.5 million against £709,000 last time. The interim dividend still reduced, though, by more than three quarters. Fortnum & Mason profits up 19% to £2.5 million. There's a 12 pence dividend. And Mullins profits up 6% to £7.2 million. The dividend's up by 50%. Finally, Datastream's fast movers. RLN down 3 at 15. Blacks Leisure down 9 at 35. Lee Interest down 51 at 175. And Whitney down 2.5 at 6.5. Angela.
Thank you, Peter. And there'll be, of course, a full roundup of all the financial news just after 6.30 this evening here on Drive Time. Right now, though, the time is 24 minutes to 6.
Stunning, evocative, inspirational. And that's just me. But seriously, he has a chance to step into style that's too good to miss. This Saturday, the Exchange Shopping Centre in Ilford is holding a day of fashion with three live fashion shows at 11, 1 and 4pm. Get personal advice from the experts on hair, body care and makeup. Create the season's look at prices you can afford with discounts at many selected stores. The Exchange Shopping Centre, High Road, Ilford. A better place to shop.
The new Tempo Computer Superstore is now open in Lakeside Retail Park. Tempo is stacked full of top brands, with the latest range from Compaq, including the Contura laptop and the ProLinear desktop. Tempo has the stock, the right prices, expertise and interest-free credit. Ask for written quotations. It's an unbeatable deal at the Tempo Computer Superstore in Lakeside Retail Park, Essex.
Tempo, the computer superstore serving the capital, now open.
This week, every approved used BMW sold in London comes with a very special feature designed to help you relax and enjoy your driving. A year's free servicing. You'll find prices reassuring too, starting at around £8,000. In fact, your only worry is making sure you don't miss this offer, which closes this weekend. For full details, call into your nearest BMW dealer within the M25. Open until 8 tonight. Or see tonight's Evening Standard.
Carol James, DHL London Lookout. In general, very heavy on the motorways. The M25, in general, heavy both ways between the junctions of the M1 and the M3, slowing down in various places on both carriageways, and an accident anti-clockwise at junction 17, that's Maple Cross, not helping the situation there. Earlier accident also on the M25 between junctions 25 and 24, the A10 and Potter's Bar, on the hard shoulder anti-clockwise, delays both ways in that area. And now an accident anti-clockwise at junction 26. A503 Seven Sisters Road is very congested. And also the A30 in the East India Dock Road, usual delays heading out of town, not helped by an earlier accident at the junction of Crisp Street. Carol James, DHL London Lookout.
you've just joined us, a very good evening to you. I'm Angela Rippon, and you're listening to Drive Time here on LBC News Talk, where it's 22 minutes to 6 o'clock. Well, the people of Tooting won't know what's hit them, I suspect, in the course of the next 3 years, because the town centre is to see a massive £20 million facelift. It's going to be greener. The underground is going to have a new look. There's going to be extra car parking. And Tooting Broadway will get its own piazza. All very continental. Well, with me now is the man who's masterminding Tooting's new image, the Deputy Council Leader, Maurice Heaster. Good evening to you.
Hello, Angela.
Now, why does Tooting need a new look? What's wrong with the old one?
Well, Tooting, like many other inner London town centres, does need a bit of a facelift. And this programme of £20 million is going to do just that.
What's it going to do exactly?
It's going to totally revitalise the area. We launched the scheme just a few hours ago in Tooting Market. We had enormous support from the local community, the traders and the local residents. And it's going to just really lift it up and revitalise it. We're going to make sure, you said about the piazza, that's going to be a new focal point for the town centre. We're going to improve the off-street car parking, which is a problem in Tooting at the present time. We're certainly going to make it a much greener and more pleasant place to work and play in as well.
I mean, interestingly, in fact, you're the second person this afternoon who's talked to me about building a piazza, because they're going to build one in the front of Victoria. I mean, this is terribly continental. Is this the way that we're going? I mean, you know, the rest of Britain may not want to join Europe, but you clearly are going very continental down there.
We certainly want to make sure that the heart of our town centre at Tooting has a completely new image. And it's very important indeed that we have something a little bit different. And the piazza will be just that.
Now, what about shopkeepers? Are they going to be asked to change their shop fronts? And if so, who's going to pay?
Well, we've launched two schemes, actually, this afternoon. One is a scheme for small businesses which would allow up to £50,000 to improve shop fronts, replace roofs, look after security.
Is that in total or for individuals?
Individuals.
Oh, no, 50,000?
Up to 50,000.
That's not bad, actually, is it?
Scheme. Absolutely. Mm. And we have a very thriving market area, and we have lots of small traders there with stalls. And we've also introduced a special scheme for them of up to £500, which went down very well indeed.
I bet it did. I mean, is the feeling generally that perhaps Tooting is lacking a little in character or central and or some sort of central focal point, and that is in fact now what you want to achieve?
That's exactly what we want to do as far as the piazza is concerned, because most of the money is going to go into revitalising the whole area, because there hasn't been tremendous sums of money spent in recent years, and this is an opportunity for Tooting to do just that.
Let me just ask you, because very often when councils come up with these wonderful ideas, changing the buildings and doing everything, which means a capital outlay, in your case of, what, £20 million, quite often means that the cost of that then has to go on the rates, and so it means that shopkeepers perhaps have got to pay a bit more for the pleasure of being part of the new look Tooting. Is any of this going to be passed on to them?
Well, of course, Wandsworth is rather unique, isn't it? Because it doesn't have any rates or community charge and hasn't done for the last 2 years. The monies we're talking about is actually capital money. Most of it actually is going to come from monies that we've actually allocated ourselves internally. And, of course, that's been partly due to our success in encouraging people to buy their own homes and releasing surplus property. So that's part of the success of the local Wandsworth Council, in having those monies available to do just that, where many other local authorities haven't. We're also hoping to enter into partnership schemes with central government on the urban programme and also with Safer Cities.
It's nice to know that at a time of recession, you're bucking the system and giving people in Tooting something to cheer about. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's the Deputy Council Leader of Tooting, Maurice Heaster. It sounds as if Tooting will be the place to visit in the next couple of years. You're listening to Angela Rippon's Drive Time, where it's 18 minutes to 6.
Are you a financial manager who allows employees to pay a fortune to travel to and from London airports? Why? London Airways, the capital's flat-rate executive car service, charge just £15 for Heathrow to or from any central London address. For details of their extremely competitive rates and company account facilities, call London Airways on 071 403 2228. That's 403 2228 and save your company a fortune.
Why did the European newspaper hope the French would vote no to Maastricht? What will the single market mean to you, your children or your business? Don't you want a say in the future of Europe? The European won't promise royal scandals or the private misdemeanours of cabinet ministers. But we're not only the paper that explains Europe, we explore the people, the places, the sport, the leisure and the opportunities for business and education. This week, meet screen idol Harrison Ford. Read our focus on economies in crisis and have your say in the great debate. Where does Europe go from here? The European, three papers in one, on sale from Thursday. Make sure of your copy.
LBC News Talk, 97.3.
And if you're watching the clock, you'll want to know it's exactly 16 and a half minutes to six. Well, the London School of Economics are fuming after it's been announced that they've failed in their bid to buy County Hall. The Japanese company Shiriyama will now complete their deal, even though the Oriental company is challenging the government's decision to halt its negotiations earlier this year so that the LSE could make a bid. Well, the London residual body has had the final say. Of course, the government has been involved all the way. Well, joining me now in the studio is one of the LSE's negotiating team, Ian Crawford. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
How do you feel about the fact that it is the university's funding council who thought that you were being, as they say, too optimistic and would not be able to afford the GLC building?
Well, we've got a report now from the University Funding Council, and the government decision seems to have been based entirely on that report. We are somewhat...
Well, it has been based on it
Indeed. Entirely.
I mean, that's what Michael Howard says.
Yes, he does. The problem we now face is that the Funding Council have agreed that we have chronic problems on our existing site. They have agreed that our strategy for expansion is imaginative, and they are broadly supporting that. We approached them about 3 years ago for some funding to buy some property immediately adjacent to our existing premises in order that we could begin the expansion programme there, and they turned down that request on the grounds that it wasn't a sufficient solution to the problem. Now, this proposal, we are entirely confident, would have been achieved without any additional funding, and we weren't asking them for funding at all, and they've turned that down. So having recognised our problem and so far not agreed with any of our proposed solutions, I think we're now going to have to ask the University Funding Council what they see as a solution to our very real problems.
Do you blame the government for this at all? I mean, it would seem from an outsider's point of view that, in fact, you were given every opportunity and the government were attempting to ease your way to acquire the building.
I don't think that was necessarily true. The government certainly did intervene to give us the opportunity to put in a bid. They gave us precisely 10 days. To put in a bid. The entire financial package was probably about 130 million, so it was rather a rush. We put together a package which we believe was entirely viable.
Touche Ross, who were the people who advised the university's funding committee, who do know a thing or two about finance, reckoned that it wasn't viable.
We spent about 10 days with... we spent at least about 10 days after our bid had gone in with Touche Ross, and they were certainly... very careful in the examination of it. The worst that could be said is that we disagree with Touche Ross at about $5 million a year. They have suggested that it may, if it goes wrong, cost $40 million over the next 8 years. There is probably very few colleges in the university system that are facing, under present circumstances, deficits of any less than that. I mean, it's got to be accepted that the government have a policy to expand probably roughly double UK higher education participation within this decade. That's not going to be an entirely cost-free exercise. What Touche Ross have also said in the report is that staying where we are, or trying to expand where we are, will be even more expensive. Now, this is...
So you're caught between a rock and a hard place.
We are indeed, and this is a dilemma which... the government at some point is going to have to participate in helping us solve.
So what's the feeling at the LSE this afternoon?
Well, we are not exactly happy with this situation. Our problems will not just go away because County Hall is not going to be the solution. So the director has called a meeting of the entire school community for Monday of next week to discuss exactly what we do next. But... having agreed that the problems are real but not seen their way to helping us with any of the solutions, at some point government is going to have to take seriously not just the problem of the LSE and its funding and the expansion of higher education, but this is not sending very good signals to the whole university system.
But as you say, in the meantime, you are expanding at the LSE and you're going to burst your banks very soon. Ian Crawford, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Ian Crawford there, one of the negotiating team who were attempting to buy the old GLC building. I'm afraid it's not to be. It's 12 minutes to six. Carol James is our DHL London lookout.
Good afternoon. Well, in general on the motorways, the M25 very heavy, particularly in the western section. Between junctions 12 and 16 clockwise, it's very slow. That's the M3 to the M40. And another accident at junction 17, that's Maple Cross, anti-clockwise. Slow back to the M1 junction at junction 21. Also delays anti-clockwise between junctions 26 and 24. That's all from Abbey to Potters Bar following earlier accidents in that area. M4, the elevated section, is reasonably slow westbound, and the M3 is slow southbound through the roadworks junctions 2 to 3. That's the M25 and Lightwater. Carol James, DHL London lookout, and there's more from Fred.
The M4 westbound from junction 4 Heathrow to junction 5 Langley, an earlier accident there causing tailbacks, and traffic masters showing about 2 or 3 miles of tailbacks. That'll probably get worse as the evening goes on. The rest of the M25 on the western sector, as Carol quite rightly said, very busy indeed, with numerous areas where it's virtual standstill, then there's a gap, then it slows down again and so on, but you'd expect that this time of the evening. If you're going up Tottenham Court Road, this is unconfirmed, but I suspect it's true, junction of Tottenham Court Road and Euston Road. That's the point where you either go north towards Hampstead Road or turn right to go towards Euston Station. There's a broken down police van there, and they tell me, and they told my friend who phoned me in, that it'll be there for another at least 45 minutes to an hour, and it's causing a fair amount of delays for northbound and eastbound traffic in that particular area.
Then why is it going to stay there that long?
Try to get a vehicle out to it, because if the traffic's bad round it, they can't get through to it. Right. Or usually the worst one of the lot is when the brakes seize up, then you really are in problems.
Yes.
Finally, New Burlington Place, the closures around there, not causing too many problems, but obviously when there's an incident in operation there, the best thing to do is to avoid it. Finally, on Network South East, out of Charing Cross, Hayes 620, Sidcup 626 are cancelled. Traffic and trains every 10 minutes.
Thank you, Fred. It's 10 minutes to 6.
One car company has invested over £2 billion in research and development in the last year, has launched three brands.